everyone, and welcome to Globalize Asia. Support for this podcast comes from Royal Beans Chocolates. Royal Beans is based out of Bangalore in India and specializes in Belgian chocolates infused with exciting flavors like masala chai, cappuccino, berry blast, walnut marble, and many more. You can gift these special crafted chocolates to your loved ones in India by visiting their website www.royalbeans.in. Use the promotional code GLA10 to get 10% discount off your order. Thank you.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Globalization. Social workers are trained professionals who use their skill sets to help and elevate communities and individuals suffering from social deprivation. Our guest today is Richa Grover, who is an advanced social work practitioner, child services with the UK government. She has been instrumental in bringing positive changes to the struggling and problem-struck families in the UK. Let's hear Richa's journey from Delhi to London, following her passion and the drive to make a difference in society.
So we have a very special guest today. With Globalization. We've been pestering her for the last 1 year. Finally, she gave in. And such her commitment, she fought with a couple of Arsenal fans, couple of Man City fans. With broken foot, she's here. No relations to Gulshan Grover. Here it is, Richa Grover. How are you?
Hi, Gagan. I'm really well, thank you. Hi, Vatsala. Lovely to be here.
So I understand, let's get straight into your day job. Let me take a deep breath and announce this. So you are, your day job is called Advanced Social Work Practitioner, Child Services, UK Government.
Yes.
Give us a brief on that. What does that entail?
Okay, so I'll, in a nutshell, I mean, I'm a qualified social worker. I have worked with the UK government, with a North London local authority in a frontline social work role as an advanced practitioner now since 2005. And it involves me working with a looked after children team, which entails taking, being the corporate parent for children who are in the care of the UK government, where the UK government is the corporate parent because their birth parents are not in a position to take care of them, to keep them safe, or they are not around, or for various reasons they are not together with their children. So I act in a corporate parent role and work on a range of issues with a variety of children, with a plethora of nationalities and children from different heritage background and countries. So it's like I was saying, you know, before we started this, there isn't a dull moment in this job, and the range of topics and issues and themes that I work with and work on could be anything from child sexual exploitation, child abuse, fostering arrangements of children within the family, children being placed outside of their birth family network with special guardians, or some children who are abandoned and are young enough that they need permanent homes so that they can fulfill their potential by way of adoption. So I work with children from 0 to 16. So this is the more what should I say, the simpler part of the job, because the age group of the children is more, they engage better because they are so much younger they're so much younger and they are dependent on a corporate parent so that their future needs can be met. But I also work with, you know, teenagers, and the age group of 13 to 16 is the more challenging one, where there are several issues that I sort of work with, like drug abuse, drug peddling, alcohol issues, a lot of mental health concerns, issues like trafficking, issues of kids being in conflict with law, youth offenders, even as extreme as young people being involved in gangs and also gang murders. So it's a range of very heavy, intense subject matters with children who are navigating life in that, you know, young age of 0 to 16 without that kind of parental support, without resources, without the positive role models. So I think it's a very serious role in that sense, so that these children can be supported by, you know, the social work task force, and I'm one of them, in order to ensure that they meet their potential, and which is really important, that kids do meet their potential, because that directly impacts the human capital of any city, country, and pretty much the world.
It's interesting. So thanks very much for sharing that with us, Richa. I think it's commendable what you do, and we can see the direct relevance, especially in today's society. So you mentioned that you started in 2005. We would like to understand how this has evolved in the relevance that your job has currently, with increasing statistics on gun crime, increasing statistics on drug abuse, and especially very, very common within the age group that you're looking at today. How important do you think, or how much has the backing of the government increased, let's say, in the last 5 years, or have you seen any shift at all?
I think this is a statutory role, so I think the government is very committed to promoting the welfare of children, improving these statistics that you talk about, ensuring that these statistics don't continue to rise, and promoting safety all around for children and society at large. Things have changed, things have improved, laws have evolved, policies come up, the procedures and methods of working with young people with training and research sort of enhances and advances, but you know, because you're working with children, they're such a dynamic sort of age group,
impressionable.
And impressionable. They're like I said earlier, the 2 days are not the same. One day is very unpredictable. It could be a normal office day and some client would turn up and something else happens, or it is a particular choice that a child makes at a particular time to join a gang or not to join a gang, to be a part of that crime or not to be a part of that crime, without understanding fully what that means, what that entails, what that would lead to. And their faculties are not developed. They could be kids with learning delays. They could be children with, you know, they haven't got the appropriate early socialization. So their faculties aren't developed. So, you know, this makes it really complex. So no matter how much work the task force is doing in terms of its commitment to alleviate all these stresses for them and for society, and to contain it so that the rest of the society can function in a normal manner, and no matter how many more resources there have been, but I think the pressures are increasing, and the issues are unfortunately on the rise, but the task force remains committed, and we live in hope that, you know, these things, with all round government support and the expertise that different professionals bring to various teams across London, with all hands on deck, things should be contained and hopefully continue to improve, and we break this vicious cycle of, you know, kids having to be dependent only on care, but the idea is to empower them so that they can continue to break free from this and make empowered individuals, despite the fact they may not have had the best start in life, really.
Richa, let me take you back. I understand you're from India, right?
Yeah.
Before I get into too much on your day role, I just want to understand what aspect of your upbringing in India that you can relate to this role, if there is any, or was it just by chance you got involved with after you moved to UK? How did you get involved into this? So I'm just trying to understand that. How did you, you know, what was your circumstances in terms of when you were growing up? Did you had any observation, so to speak, or any exposure to that kind of issues growing up in India? And you had something, you know, you sound very passionate about this. So I'm hoping there is something in the background that kind of got you involved in this.
Yeah, I think it was a very measured, and it was a very quantified, and it was a very choice-driven discipline that I committed myself to and navigated into. So, I mean, I grew up in a business family, and my grandfather was very politically active. He was very socially engaged, various kinds of issues and social issues and various kinds of projects. He was always trying to deliberate upon or contribute in his way in his youth, and one would hear stories about him being a part of maybe starting the first being a part of the Zilla Parishad back in the day in Dhanbad in Bihar where he was, or starting the first Super Bazaar, or being a part of a drive where women first started to women were being sort of encouraged to vote, or children's education was being sort of promoted because he started the first DAV. He started teaching at the DAV college and started a first wing of underprivileged children coming to DAV school for free, etc., etc. So one has heard anecdotes and those stories. So somewhere sort of they have an impression on young impressionable minds. Otherwise, my family has been hardcore corporate and business and profit driven. But at the same time, you know, that desire to sort of give back as a lot of capitalist families can have was there. But I think I wanted to do something different. I felt the need to be able to use that sort of privilege of probably because of what my grandfather had achieved or what my parents had achieved to build on it, you know, rather than just go down that route. Why I thought, why don't I sort of give back to society in a more organized way? Why don't I develop certain skills, acquire the tools, sort of imbibe the techniques, and understand how does one work with society? Because issues, society and its problems and its glaring issues used to disturb me. Even in school, even at university, I was always interested in, you know, doing whatever little bit I could do to improve anything, you know, in my immediate environment. So I was always that kind of a doer. So when I, you know, I took up a degree in sociology in my undergraduate, for my undergraduate course at the Lady Shriram College, which was like a fantastic college to be in. You know, I met the brightest minds in peers of young women, and amazing mentors that I found in teachers, and everybody was involved in something. There were various causes floating around. There was so much that one could do, could learn. It was, you know, almost disempowering because one didn't feel good enough. So I always wanted to learn from others, to better myself, and to you know, strike when the time was right. So when I finished that degree in sociology, it really equipped me by giving me like sort of a critical aperture to view the reality. But sociology doesn't teach you to intervene in society. It makes you observe various issues, various problems, various social phenomena. But I wasn't just convinced with that because my nature was that of a doer. But sometimes I was a rebel without a cause. I didn't know how to sort of channel it and structure it. So I was researching those days. I mean, I passed out of university in 2001. 2002, I beg your pardon, and there wasn't that kind of career counseling available or those kind of, you know, options that are available now. So I tried, maybe through journalism I could bring about you know, a difference by writing about various things, by reporting things. So I remember failing all journalism tests that I took because I think at that point my writing or my reading may not have been up to the mark because one is really busy studying and there's a, you know, and all the rest of it. So I thought, okay, what is it that I can do? So I had family members who had, extended family members who had done a course in social work. I had no idea about it. I went to the only college of social work that exists in Delhi. It's called the Delhi School of Social Work. And I thought, fine, I need to get this degree because this degree is this official tool which allows me, which gives me the license to intervene where there are problems and gives me that kind of freedom to and yet the responsibility to sort of challenge channel my commitment towards improving society. So I think that's where this entire formalization started, and the rest, as they say, is history. So that was my degree in social work, and you know, I did a job, I did a couple of jobs for 6-7 months after I qualified as a social worker in Delhi. I was quite interested in corporate social responsibility, I was interested in humanitarian law, I was interested in refugee rights, repatriation, you know, the human displacement really affected me. I worked with a couple of Afghan refugee families in Delhi, and again, the what struck me there was, you know, the children, the most vulnerable group and the most important group, the future of tomorrow of any country. And I was like, you know, when children are at these crossroads because of decisions governments have made, or societies have made, or families have made, or adults have made, or different pressure groups have made, you know, they are the helpless victims there, and someone needs to be their sort of voice of reason, someone who can advocate for them. And there's so many people who've done that before, who continue to do it, who do it better. So I just wanted to be that one person who joins that movement in sort of committing to children, because I feel if you intervene at that young age, you can really bring about a change in the social fabric. So I somewhere committed to working with children at that point. And then a job came up in London. I went for the interview. I still remember I was underage. I was only 23 when I applied for it, and the minimum age qualification was 25. I still went for it, and
what
said,
was the job?
It was a job with the UK government in a child protection team, and you know, and I said, well, they said you have no experience. I said, well, somebody has to give me the experience, and where did you start? I asked the interviewer. I was actually genuinely interested. They said they were struck by my sort of zest and drive to be able to contribute, and you know, I got that job, which was fantastic. I had never sat on a plane before. I had never been abroad before. I didn't know what to expect. I literally thought, okay, this would be another experience. And 23 years of age, in 2005, just with that social work degree, with no family understanding of this, literally, you know, striking in the dark, I came to London for a year for this experience in social work on the front line with the government, to have that on my CV. But 15 years later, I'm still here. I work in an advanced social work role. I'm very committed to it, and I have had some real amazing experiences, and you know, like they say, the rest is history, which I said. And you know, there's so much to do and there's so much to achieve, but you know, the one thing that I would like to say is that London gives you that kind of platform, or the UK government with these sort of regularized job roles, which give you the power, the authority, the respect, the responsibility, and that kind of a platform to be able to safeguard the needs of these children in an organized way, backed by the state. It's really ahead of, you know, child protection in many than many countries in the world can only aspire to, because of, you know, lack of resources and whatnot. So I feel really fortunate to be able to, one, contribute, but more importantly, to be able to get that training myself, to train myself as that professional who can continue to contribute here, work with a diverse group of children, but also who knows, contribute where in future.
That's excellent, Richa, and that's so enriching to hear. So for those of you listening, especially in the UK, would know that calling Richa a bit of a social butterfly would be, you know, a slight understatement.
That's not true, but okay.
Social and butterfly, that's the first time I've heard that. That's quite interesting. But I think it's quite interesting that 15 years ago you joined this job, but the excitement in your voice is still very, you know, adamant. Not adamant is the right word, but it's very
apparent.
Apparent, yeah. Yes, that you're still very passionate about this. And it's quite interesting to meet someone who is so passionate about a job who started 15 years ago and still, you know, excited about it. Because we, as we know, in a corporate world, we get very quickly bored about a mundane life. You are very close to some of the real issues in the world, and sounds very, you know, I think most of us would relate to that when we open the television and we see what's happening in Yemen and Syria of the world. But what's happening in your own backyard, it's something you're very close to it. So how do you, I'm sure it's 15 years, so you've learned to deal with it, because these are very sensitive issues.
Yeah.
How was it early days for you? Did you expect it that kind of sensitive and tough issues that you would be dealing with it? And how did you, you know, deal with, how did you learn from those experiences, situations? Did you have anyone mentored you? You know, how did you actually came out of it, and still now you're very, very into it and very passionate about it?
And more importantly, how did you deal with it? Because I'm sure there are days when you come back with a very disturbing episode of a child who's just been brought in, for example, and then, you know, how do you find what strategies to cope with something like that?
Yeah, I think it's a very relevant question, a question that has, you know, come up in my heart and mind several times, sort of over the years. I am very passionate as a person, and I don't do something unless and until I'm sure about it, because I think you have to be honest about what you do. I think especially when you work with children, especially when you do social work, I don't think you can, that's my view, you can't survive this unless and until you definitely want to do this. You're definitely committed to this. I mean, it pays well here, so there is remuneration that can, you know, allow you that kind of time to indulge in things that you want to do, to recharge yourself, so you can sort of give back. And there's a lot of training, and there's a lot of mentors who float around to sort of equip you one doesn't become an advanced practitioner, you know, straight away. You have to go through the motion. It took me a decade actually before I was ready even to apply for a position of this sort, because I didn't feel I was advanced enough. I was struggling, like Vatsala, you said. I was upset. There were many days I was upset. The things never left my mind and heart. I felt guilty. I felt that maybe I wasn't a good enough social worker.
To take it personally.
Yeah, to be able to cope with it, because
to
others
detach
were
yourself.
To detach. I think because that is a skill. I felt others were doing better. I was constantly comparing myself and putting myself down. So I think, but there comes a time that, you know, either that can make you or break you. So I decided that wasn't going to. I wasn't going to allow that to break me, because then at that point you quit, you know. And have I ever thought about quitting? Several times, because, you know, as a human being, it hits you, it upsets you, and there's compassion fatigue, there's emotional exhaustion, and there's all of that. Because
I mean, we hear people taking voluntary roles to go out in Syria and to help children, and they are quite disturbed with just 3 months of working with children.
Yeah, you don't know what hits you until you're into this. And I was 23 years old when I started. I had a very cushiony life. I did not know what hit me, but I at that time I just couldn't just go back. I would have felt like a failure. I did this to get this feeling. Oh wow, I've achieved at such a young age to come to London. That wasn't the norm back in, you know, say 15 years ago. As much as it's today, people are coming a lot more. Economy has changed, India has changed, people are traveling a lot, much more easily than before. The purchasing power is different, and things are, you know, India's on a, you know, on a roll, and there's boom of all sorts. But I think at that time, especially in a profession like social work, maybe it happens in corporate professions or MBAs or medicine, that's seen, you know, that kind of mobility, it has seen that kind of a movement to the West. But social work, you do. And I felt like a traitor initially, because a lot of my peers used to tell me, you did social work to change things in India, who goes to London, you know, you're like, you know, and there's a lot of negative commentary about it. I questioned myself, because I joined social work to change India, and here I was, you know, thinking that, oh, should I be indulging, should I be doing this? And when you see so much upset all around you, it raises a lot of moral dilemmas. So that's sort of what do you say in Hindi, the antar dwand, the, you know, you know,
internal conflict.
Google that.
Yeah, and it is that internal conflict, you know, and that I struggled with, and it was a long drawn process. And how do you keep that passion alive? So I've read books, I've asked seniors in the profession, how do you stay motivated, how do you last in this profession, because I've seen many people quit. I came with a group of other social workers. I saw some other social workers return back to India, or, you know, choose to do different things or whatever. So I was like, I'm And no judgment there, you know, because it could have been me. But I was like, okay, let us think of strategies, how one can cope, how one can continue, how one can better. And maybe I will fail, but maybe I will not fail. And I never put that kind of maybe not pressure, but that kind of extra faith in myself, because I didn't have that. I didn't want to overestimate my ability to be able to sustain this. So I thought, okay, let's try various things. I think there were days that were depressing me. There were days that were making me feel that I was waking up to go into problems. 9 to 5, I'm firefighting issues and problems. I'm firefighting fights and discord. I'm firefighting abandonment and hurt. And what is breaking point? And till how much point can you take that? So, of course, I did a lot of training to deal with all of that. So that was the more professional side of it. But personally, I thought I needed more excitement.
Maybe it's a good time then to talk about Richa's other dimension, or rather another dimension of a multifaceted personality.
Yeah, so I think if you are on Richa's friend list on Facebook,
oh, please.
You would see that you are a socialite, so to speak, and you're very,
That's
very...
the first time somebody has said that. I'm not sure how to take that, but...
Well, it's someone who is socially very active, right?
Yeah, I prefer that.
And not for the sake of being active as well.
Yeah, and you probably... It's probably your getaway from your day job.
I think you've nailed it. It is my getaway. I think it is my escape, because I wanted to. It is a very serious job that I do. It's very intense. These are real people. These are real challenges. I'm involved in the lives of some of these, you know, young people that I work with as a frontline professional for years. Any time I thought of quitting, that's one of the reasons I've not even switched jobs from one local authority to another. I wanted to get, you know, senior position in the same local authority just for that continuity, because I don't know, I just somewhere felt I'm an emotional person. I'm very passionate, but that comes with its downside. You know, you can't detach, you can't like let go, you can't move on, you can't progress. So it somewhere sort of holds you too much. So, you know, I just thought that I had to explore other dimensions of my personality, of my aptitude, which I didn't think that I ever had, to see what is it that I'm capable of doing. London actually gives you that kind of platform, that exposure to meet people. You know, I remember I met one gentleman on a train who was a doctor, but then now he was a painter, and then he was learning this music. I hadn't had that kind of exposure to people in a certain age group back in my social circle in India, to have had that kind of worldview. Oh, you could be one thing but do another thing, be passionate about the third thing.
Why do you think that? Is it because of lack of social stigma here in UK than in India?
I don't know, maybe. Not sure social stigma is the right word, but I think it's just a bit
because
more
people bracket you, you know, they put you in in a bubble.
Jobs define you.
Why do you want to
certain...
do what you want to do after a certain age?
Yeah, after a certain
age.
It's a form of stratification, Gagan. I think it stratifies you. These are the people who are doctors, these are the people who are social workers, these are the people who are bankers, or these are the people who are lawyers. If you're constantly shifting, you're seen as fluid or you're seen as non-committal. I think it's those moral ideas.
So what
commitment.
We're doing here is exactly
what you guys do is amazing. You know, you have corporate jobs and you do this, you bring different Asians on this sort of platform to talk about. I mean, I remember the 1 year ago when we met and when you said let's do this, I was so excited, and I thought, wow, this is amazing that I have this opportunity. But I didn't feel ready, because I didn't feel honest enough, I didn't feel I knew enough to be able to, you know, quantify. But I have to admit that I have worked very, very hard in the last 1 year, much more than I've done before.
Just to get on this
just
show.
Just to get on this show.
Wow, we feel privileged now. We totally feel privileged.
Totally. So yeah, I mean, going back to the socially relevant things, I have done a lot of different things, and we can talk about them or not, depending on how much time we have, to be able to keep myself motivated, to be able to keep myself sort of fresh in my mind, to be able to allow myself that space to be distracted by the problems only, and to sort of touch base with sort of my own reality and not get sort of consumed or feel guilt consumed by other people's reality at a particular point in time. It's not to say that these the client group that I work with is going to be this grim for them forever, and hell no, and that's what we're working towards, and there could be massive success stories out of this. So, you know, I think it was important to not get stuck in that rut, so, and to remain committed to my job. So I think my other things that I've done have allowed me to sustain this passion, and I'm very grateful for it.
I think a good place or a good example to start some of the other work that you do and some of the very relevant and constructive work you do will be to perhaps give us a little bit of an insight about this alumni network from Lady Shriram College that you've built outside India, and such a prevalent, strong network of some really powerful personalities here in the UK, and the work that you've done at the back of that.
Okay, so thank you for this question. I mean, I don't like to take too much credit for this because this is my humble way of giving back to college, a college that literally made, me in my formative years, gave me that confidence, the wings to fly and to sort of explore other horizons. I remember, I mean, the anecdote is there was an alumni network being set up called ELSA 4 years ago or something in India. I really wanted to go for that alumni meet because I thought, oh, let's go back, connect with, you know, college and teachers and classmates and peers and whatnot, and be a part of the movement ELSA was trying to create and generate. It's a 60-year-old institution. It's the number one college for women in India and Asia. So I thought, you know, I must sort of be a part of this new thing happening. But, you know, work pressures and other commitments came in, took over, and I wasn't able to travel. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to feel left out because I spent a week feeling left out. I thought, why don't we do a parallel get together in London? I knew 5 people from college at that time, but I thought, okay, why don't we try and set this up here? That would be the first international chapter for LSR alumni. I'm sure there are alumni all over the world. We're 65,000 of us worldwide.
Wow.
So I thought, let's do this. And, you know, we put out a little story out in a paper of and that we were going to meet up. I didn't know how many people would turn up, and I remember Shard had just opened then, so randomly I said, you know, we had no budget, nothing, we said let's meet up there for a drink. But because it was so exciting, it was a new place, people wanted to check it out, or I don't know what that was, and people's intrinsic love for LSR, 50 people turned up. So I never knew 50 girls from LSR sort of were there. And now, I mean, 4 years into it, we've formalized a chapter. It's the first international outpost for ELSA, and many other international chapters have come up all across the world. 65,000 alumni have been connected. In London, we're 250 of us, so I've made 250 new acquaintances and several friends. And we use.
Let's not underestimate your quality for collaboration as well, and very meaningful collaboration, Richa, because this is something that's come out of people who you have either directly or indirectly helped. And everyone seems to think that you have this quality where you give back in other ways, and you actually use the platform that you have or the experience you have to connect people and then put them in the right direction.
Oh, thank
so
you
I
for
think
that.
It's a very, very commendable quality to have. And
yeah, on that note, I think, you know, humanity in my eyes should always prevail as nationalism or patriotism, and you are a shining example of that. You've been doing amazing work with youth in UK, and also carrying your past in terms of your education at ELSA, alumni in UK, and you've been doing some amazing work. I would suggest people to go on Facebook and check her out. You know, you've been all over the place in a good way.
And she writes a couple of columns for Asian Light.
Yeah, I write columns for some Asian publications in the UK, so which has sort of given me that kind of a platform again to sort of meet up and interview the big wigs and the leading lights from different backgrounds and people of Indian origin and otherwise, or Indians in the UK, because I chair a minority commission for a local authority in North London. So I'm quite committed to this entire minority discourse in the UK and the diversity agenda. So it's my sort of humble bit to keep the flag flying for the Asian diaspora in the UK and to make our mark, really.
So next time you see a picture of Richa with Kajol or with Harbhajan Singh, there's no reason to envy. There's a meaningful cause behind it.
Yeah, on that note, we both touch your feet and take some blessings.
Oh, please.
Thank Thank you very much.
You're older than me, Gagan.
you are a bigger person than I am.
Oh, please, hardly. You guys have this platform, and I'm thank you so much for this opportunity and giving me the confidence, actually, to be able to speak about this. If it wasn't for globalization, and this is true story, hashtag true story, everyone, I would have never done this. So thank you, guys. Mutual admiration all around.
Pleasures altogether ours, Richa, and more power to you, more luck, and keep flying the flag high. Good luck, and thanks so much for chatting to us.
Thank you so much, guys.
Hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. You can catch all upcoming episodes on the website globalize-asian.co.uk or via your iOS or Android devices. Also, if you wish to join us as a speaker and share your story, please do drop us a message via the contact form on the website.